anyone have any good salads lately?
Yep. I get mine tossed all the time.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to welcome Pat Riley, who will share with us his new music, some of which we'll be featuring on today's actual break. And of course, we're also going to be having Dr. Goldstein join us again for this month's Tales from the Tale. My name is Tom, and I'm your host. And as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
So it's going to be a little weird, right? Because typically we would do a dish. We would talk about some stories in the first episode or in the first segment. But we're going to switch things up today because, as you heard before, we have two unique and different guests coming on. We're going to be talking about some medical stuff in the first half and then jumping into some music and that kind of dialogue in the second. So without further ado, I would like to welcome back to the show Dr. G. Today's topic of choice is going to be, of course, talking about people who like to get their salads tossed, or in other words, get their ass eaten out.
And then some,
because there's a lot of other things that, you know, go along with that and risk. But we're definitely going to be covering all of that. So welcome back to the show, Dr. G.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Hope you guys are well.
We are. Well, I am.
We're all fabulous, ready to go.
Absolutely.
Cocktails in hand and all that good stuff.
It was a rush today. So Yale graduation, obviously we're in New Haven, Yale graduation happened this weekend, and my God, everybody was leaving the city at like 5 o'clock today and getting from, I'm literally like 2 minutes from the highway for my job. It took me 15 minutes to get from my work to the highway, and Chris was texting. He was like, the traffic, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
It was bad.
It was insane.
It was.
And it didn't help that right when I got in my car, it started fucking pouring.
Do you have to use that language?
Oh, sorry, right? There's a doctor on.
I like fucking. I like fucking. It's perfect.
Don't we all?
So anyway, let's jump into this month's Tales from the Tale, because who doesn't love to get their ass eaten? Which is very true. Actually, I like to eat it. Anyway, so when I was reading this, in the beginning section, it's talking about, it says, you know, who doesn't love to get their ass eaten, I can surely say that I do. So I'm reading this, and in my head, I'm like, oh my God, Dr. G, why would you like put that out there? I'm like, oh wait, that's the client side. That's the client side.
Totally. And I got so many DMs saying, Evan, like, this is fucking awesome. Like, I'm coming over to eat your ass.
That's so amazing. So anyway, I would love to eat your ass too. But can you tell us a little bit about what this story entails and what this story is about?
Trish. Oh my God.
Just for, you know, the public, I do more of eating the ass than getting my ass eaten.
Okay.
But you know, you can always eat my ass. It's no problem.
Yes! Wait for all those DMs.
So this story was kind of interesting. Obviously, it was a guy that really loves to get their ass eaten. And during this, he started to really have some issues. You know, I think it was a little bit complicated of a story just because he loves also to kind of get fucked, though he can't necessarily reach full orgasm or ejaculation with someone inside of him, his partner. But in order to actually get there, he loves his foreplay. And the foreplay, obviously, just getting eaten and really kind of getting everything all ready to roll for him to then go to the next level. But even that was becoming more and more of an issue. He wound up getting these small little tears, irritation, and then that caused him, obviously, to not enjoy anything. It was quite painful. Even just kind of wiping, using toilet paper was irritating to him. And, you know, he went from doctor to doctor, and, you know, a lot of people don't know the right way to treat this, and they'll think it's just kind of localized irritation that, oh yeah, put like preparation H, or oh yeah, put a little bit of some steroid cream. But then it started to get continue and really impact his sexual life, where he decided to kind of seek us out. And lo and behold, the second I look at his ass, it was two things. One, it was using wet wipes, which we've spoken about multiple times, mm-hmm. which causes a lot of trauma and irritation and should not be used. And the second is herpes. And you could see it. It's pretty classical. It's these small little cuts kind of around.
So that's interesting you say that, because in the story, he talks about actually getting STD testing done.
Mm-hmm.
And it came back incorrect or, inconclusive, right? And so he comes to you and you think it may be herpes. And then what did you do? And like, how do you know if you're getting an incorrect STD test?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things when a lot of people email or DM us and kind of say, oh, yeah, I was STD negative. And I think the question that that needs to be followed is, well, what does that mean? Where do they actually take sampling? If you look at most primary care or physicians that take care of our community, they're not actually doing all of the STD screening that they should. So most people think, oh, yeah, let's just get a blood test and that'll show chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, HIV, et cetera. Yes, it does. But the reality is that we are oral, anal people, right? Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, you need to do swabs orally. There needs to be swabs anally. And you also need to be collecting urine to make sure. I mean, you have to remember, there's so many people that come to me that have localized STD issues. So you're a bottom. That's where your STD issue is. It's going to take a while for the blood test to actually become potentially positive.
Right.
There are many people that have silent STDs that wouldn't necessarily know it. And if you're not swabbing the ass, swabbing the mouth, and pissing in a cup, you're going to miss a significant amount of STDs.
Right. So I'm sorry. So if you're at the doctor and they're saying you need to go, like I just recently had my doctor's appointment and they signed me up for all of my blood work, including STDs and all that stuff. And I didn't say, hey, can I get this test, and this test? Can you ask that question and have it covered under insurance if you're...
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. I think I would just call it out. I think, you know, there's so many people that are delivering care that they may not necessarily truly know from a community perspective. And you could do some, you know, poking and prodding. I don't think you need to call out and be like, hey, dude, you're an asshole. You don't have the right education to support this. I just would say to them, hey, you know, look, I engage anally and orally, and this from, you know, Dr. Goldstein on Gay Talk, that we need to be doing all these swabs. And you can educate them to say that.
Would you say that having a doctor that is versed in the LGBT community or part of the community, something that you should seek out, because we're more hypervigilant of the fact that we have to pay attention to these other STDs that typical, you know, medical doctors usually won't offer in their offices if they're not, you know, astute to what's going on in the LGBT community?
I think it really helps. I mean, there are definitely people that are not part of our community but have the sensitivities to that. Mm-hmm. But you'll know that through doing the right research. You know, a lot of people, you know, everyone writes reviews and kind of gives you the lowdown of who these people are. So I think you guys got to do your research. When we did some research, even in the gay community of gay practitioners, most don't even actually do the right screening protocol. That's out there. So I think what we're trying to do is more empower us as a community to say, hey, these are the standard ways to approach STD screening, and make sure that we're demanding that to begin with. You know, and that sets us up for the success that we need.
So herpes itself, the virus, it spreads by contact, correct? So it's skin to skin or body fluid to body fluid. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, I think herpes gets broken down into type 1 and type 2. Mm-hmm. Type 1 is the oral kind. You know, up to about 70% of most people, even under the age of 50, are positive for herpes simplex virus 1. That's the cold sore on your mouth that people get. And most of the time, it's dormant. It usually only comes out in stressful situations. And so with that being said, you know, then you go into herpes simplex virus 2, which is more genitally located. And that in and of itself is more represented in females than in the gay community. But the interesting thing is that it's like 12% of from the ages of 14 to 50 have HSV2, whereas HSV1 is obviously the more common types. Skin to skin, licking, rubbing, playing, all the stuff that we do.
Okay.
And it breaks down the skin. And when it breaks down the skin, it now is a higher incidence of getting other STDs as well. Okay. A lot of the HIV transmissions, it's a 2 to 4-fold increase in getting HIV if you're bottoming with an active herpes issue.
Wow.
And it's just because you have irritation and raw surface there. And then now the blood-to-blood transmission can actually cause you to have other things happen.
So that's actually a perfect segue, because after one is diagnosed with herpes, obviously you still want to engage anally and orally. What is the safest practice? And also, how do you go about doing it once you're diagnosed, knowing I have an outbreak, I don't have an outbreak? How do you move forward sexually, both anally and orally?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first things is there's blood tests that you can do, but the problem with the blood test is very ambiguous. You know, what happens is that you, because we all get exposed to this, we create these antibodies towards the virus. And so when you're doing a blood test, it's basically just showing you that, yes, indeed, you did have active issues at some point. You don't necessarily know if it's truly at that specific time, right? So what I've been doing is a lot more kind of herpes swabbing of the actual ulceration. So if someone comes to the office and I see this and we're talking and I think it's a herpes, I'll basically take a swab just like you would any other swab and anally kind of brush those areas to try and see if I can potentially come back positive to show, is it herpes one or is it herpes two? Now, in the gay community, you see a lot of herpes simplex virus one anally. So that was where this, you know, this person that came to my office, this client had, we lick, we rub, we do a lot of fun stuff down there. And so, you know, you can imagine that the oral herpes simplex virus one can definitely cause contamination in that area. And so especially with bottoming in and of itself, how we're preparing, how we're engaging, there's always these small little cracks, you know, beyond the normal crack that's there, right? And with that said, using wet wipes, doing all of these things creates more inflammation and more irritation that now all of a sudden somebody goes down there, licks away, and they now give you HSV-1 in that area. So, I mean, I think I do some swabbing that's there. I'll do the blood work as well, but I've never really been able to conclusively come up with anything on the blood test. It's more of clinical inspection, so I'm looking, and then also the swabbing that's there. I think usually what winds up happening is, you know, just like in this client, we gave him a nice round of Valtrex, which treats, you know, this. It's very, very well tolerated. And then it solved the issue. Now, I love a cream called acyclovir. It's very similar to the oral Valtrex that you would take. But again, remember, for the gay world, it's isolated. So Right. Do you really need a pill, a systemic pill? Can you just do local treatment with using an antiviral cream? The answer is yes. The problem is it's super fucking expensive. And the insurance companies don't approve it unless you show that they failed the Valtrex, because the Valtrex is so cheap. So the standard is, let's say you get an infection, we treat it with Valtrex. And a lot of times I even treat it, even if I get a negative result on my swab, because it's a clinical, you know, you listen to them. It's irritating. It's these small little tears, etc. And then they resolve, and then we get them back to the game, you know, and we get them back to playing.
Right.
If it becomes a recurring thing where it's like, hey, you know what, either my partner is constantly, you know, giving it to me, or the stress in life, or just kind of the local irritation, then we would put somebody on kind of like a prophylactic Valtrex that would then allow them to engage the way that they want to, knowing that it would decrease their chances of having a recurrent issue. Most people cite 2 to 3 times of having kind of a herpes outbreak where they would then qualify for being on a long-term suppressive treatment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused in regards to transmission.
Sure.
Say when you have a couple and someone in the couple has HSV2. Now, if the person is going down on them and herpes were to be transmitted to them, can HSV2 like lead to HSV1, or are they completely separate? Like, can you get HSV2 in the mouth, or would you automatically, by doing oral sex, get herpes in your genital area?
Well, I think that there's two issues we should clarify. One is, remember, we mostly have herpes, and it's mostly dormant.
Right.
So it's always with us. It's just kind of dormant. And if it's dormant, in theory, you really shouldn't be having active transmission, right? Because it's not active. But let's say someone has a sore, they didn't know it. Let's say on your tongue, you know, you ever get a sore on the inside of the tongue, that can also be a herpes issue. So now I'm going down on someone with a sore on my tongue, licking away, I can give active issues because I currently have an active issue myself. Now, they're deeming HSV1 and HSV2 more from the geographic location.
Okay.
So oral being HSV1, genital being HSV2. In the gay community, I think all bets are off. So I agree with you. I think realistically, an HSV2 issue, if I'm licking ass and you have HSV2 active, in theory, now I'm potentially getting an HSV2 oral. Could it be considered an HSV1? Yeah. I mean, I think you're getting the technical of HSV1 and 2 more of from a location perspective. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
It brings up a good point too, though. It's when you're engaging, both maybe as somebody who has herpes or somebody that's engaging somebody who also may have. How can you tell, individually, right? How would I be able to know if I had herpes, I was having an outbreak, just to be safe? And if you're engaging with somebody, are there visual signs? Like, how would you know if it's just like this guy in the story just had cuts, right? And so if I'm engaging orally in his ass, how would I know? Or is it just a risk that
I don't
you
think
take?
The thing is that I don't think you necessarily would know unless like you're like me, where like I turn on the light and I'm looking and I'm like, all right, I can't lick that until I make sure that there's nothing that's there.
Okay.
with that said, I think a couple of things. One is for us to empower everybody to take it upon themselves to know when not to engage, uh-huh. right? So like if you have a sore that's on your lip, if your tongue has a little white bubble and it's irritating and it's painful, then like, you know, tonight you're planning to suck dick, don't, right? You know, just say, hey, you know what? It's not the most opportune time to
Chris,
do
are you
that.
Writing this down?
I got two hands. We'll be fine.
I'm sorry.
Same thing, you know, genitally, you know, anally, you know, it's really raw. It's sore. It's painful. A full-fledged herpes outbreak is super painful. I mean, you're not happy. You're kind of bouncing around and you're irritated. There's a lot of issues. Now, the client was irritating, but it was not to that full-blown, you know, severe case, right? And that's where his was herpes simplex virus 1, which is this kind of waxing and waning, little bit of irritation. You don't know what it's from. Is it just from wiping too much? That type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think what the other is there a way to prophylactically treat? And we've spoken about this before, which is like, hey, you know, I'm going to the white party, or hey, I'm going to the black party, and I know I'm going to be in these certain situations. Could you, in essence, go on Valtrex and bring your risk down? The answer is yes. Are people studying that? Not really.
It's funny that you
mentioned
that.
But when you see it, you know, it's the same thing as what we're doing with doxycycline. It's the same thing with PrEP. There is, you know, if you're able to understand and you're able to know, hey, this is my risk going into this long Memorial Day weekend, what can I do to mitigate that risk? There's a lot of things that are out there.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I just literally read an article about the upcoming 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots and Pride being celebrated, World Pride in New York City, and where the author was warning people, you know, that this is going to be a concoction of anything goes at this point, because you have the world visiting New York City for Pride, there's a good chance that you are going to be exposed to STDs. And so that being said, to go back to what you were saying that, you know, the virus in itself, the herpes, can live dormant in us. So is it safe to assume that there is no cure, but it is a manageable disease?
Yeah, so totally manageable disease. You're right. You know, most people get the infection and they harbor it. Your body learns to fight it off. That's where the blood work really gives you good guidance to know, like, hey, yeah, not only did you get it before, but your body has already created these responses that now can kind of mitigate further issues. You know, and now with Valtrex being out there and being readily available, it really should mitigate everyone's risk going forward.
So you were just recently talking about what in the article is called party dosing, right? So you're taking Valtrex because you may be exposed. You're taking these things because you may be exposed. Is there any information on how effective this actually is? And also, how the hell do you go about telling your doctor, hey, I just need a prescription for like maybe 10 pills for the weekend or 5 pills or whatever it is?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely know that it works, considering that sometimes people even feel like they're, oh, hey, I'm potentially getting a flare, and then they take the Valtrex right away, and then it brings them down. And they don't necessarily need to even do a full dosing of, let's say, a week. They could even do 3 to 5 days of dosing, even at a suboptimal milligram dosing. So, like, let's say you have an active issue. You're doing about 1,000 milligrams twice a day for 7 days. Okay. If you're doing suppressive treatment, you're doing 500 milligrams once a day. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely doctors that kind of play in that range to create that, you know, and create those effects. With that said, you know, when I talk about party dosing, it's just, again, knowing that, hey, I'm going to be at this high risk exposure. How can I bring my risks down?
Right.
And with that said, you got to play around with it and try to see what works. Some people I know just do the prophylactic dosing 3 to 5 days before the weekend. They'll do 500 milligrams, start from there just once a day, enjoy their weekend. And then after, depending upon where they're going, they can stop it and then create the environment that's that.
Now, would doctors prescribe Valtrex as a preventative drug?
They should.
As now, you not just a party dose, but say you're in a relationship where someone is affected with HSV2 and you are not, would a doctor then prescribe you Valtrex so you can continue to have sex but keep you from getting infected?
Yeah, I mean, I think that anyone in their right mind would analyze someone's relationships and figure out, hey, you know what, this is an appropriate, you know, Valtrex ordering that we can do. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think, again, it brings us all the way back to understanding the community and having doctors that actually understand all of the intricacies to our community that are willing to do that. I think nowadays you got a lot of telemedicine, you got a lot of stuff online that you're able to now access people that you can concretely discuss risk and then decide from there. But right. Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is that yes, and the goal is, again, for us to empower whoever's listening and you guys to go to your physicians and say, hey, this is what's going on. Now, look, if you don't have high risk exposure, if there's no active issues and you're doing all these right things, should you potentially be getting Valtrex as a preventative? No, I don't really think it's probably that much of an indication. It just depends on what risks that you're putting yourself into.
Right. So I have one more thing I want to touch on before we wrap this up. I know that we have a jam-packed show today, but like HPV, for example, mm-hmm. you have long-term effect, especially women. So if they get HPV, there's the chance of cervical cancer or so on. With herpes, is there any long-term effects based on location or based on the location of the infection or just having it in general?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a couple of things. One is more of like, how does it interfere with people's relationships, right? And that's what we're kind of addressing now. Most of it, you know, is super, super rare. You know, like sometimes you can get meningitis. You can get really, really a lot of different stuff. You can get these extragenital lesions that may be like in the buttock or the groin, things like that. From a cancer perspective, there has not been a link from that perspective. Now, obviously, there is a link from HIV right? There's a higher incidence of getting other STDs if you have active issues that are there. And then again, same kind of component of, well, now that I have this outbreak, I'm more susceptible to HPV, which then brings you into the realm that you're talking about here. Right. So, I mean, I think it's all part and parcel that everything, what goes around, comes around. Mm-hmm. And the key for us is, you know, it's not to, because I'm writing a blog now of someone that is so fucking freaked out from an STD perspective that, like, they don't get their ass licked and they don't have fun. And it impacts so much emotionally. That's where I think the discussion needs to be happening now.
You know, that's such an interesting point, and I know I got to shut up because we have to close it out, but but it's so true. I mean, like, growing up in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, all you hear about, at least that group of, you know, individuals, is HIV and dying because you're gay. And so the gay community, I know for a fact that myself, I am so afraid of STDs because of what we learned. Because we're gay men, we have a higher risk to die just by engaging sexually.
Well, I think people in the 70s actually had a very liberating experience when it came to sexual experiences. I think that most of that fear came in the 80s and in especially in the mid 80s, when there was a lot of uncertainty as to what it was that was happening, right. What was causing, for example, people to develop AIDS. They didn't really target or pinpoint what HIV was, you know, right around 1983, 84. Mm-hmm. So I feel that even for myself and my co-host growing up, there was always that element of fear, like, you know, you better make sure that you do this, or you can't actually engage this way because you will get this, mm-hmm. and you will die. And that fear was instilled in us. And now, you know, we jump, you know, almost 30 plus years later, and we have things like PrEP, and we have things like Valtrex and things like that. What I wanted to ask you before we left, for people who are actively taking PrEP and taking the prophylaxis to make sure that they are, you know, protecting themselves and, of course, other people around them, is there any side effects by taking PrEP and Valtrex and any other, like, you know, weekend cocktails for parties that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all obviously drugs, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they need to be monitored. Kidney, liver function tests need to be checked. You know, PrEP and Valtrex are really super well tolerated. But, you know, you have to weigh the risks and the benefits of its use, right? If you're actively having issues and it's limiting your capacity in anything, then you don't really have a choice, you know? And so with that being said, that's one. The other is that, like, the guy that's not having, you know, anal or not getting his ass licked because he's so mentally freaked, that's someone that, yes, we should put them on Valtrex. Why shouldn't I or any physician do something to give people what they want in life and try and minimize the mental masturbation as it relates to STDs. And I think that is kind of, again, what we're trying to do is I'm trying to teach not only physicians, but everyone out there to empower themselves, to look at themselves and say, hey, look, well, is this holding me back? Is this not? What is available to me and what isn't? And how can I go to professionals knowing that, hey, this is what I want? And if they don't give you what you want, or they don't understand the risk and analyze that, then call me or email us or email you guys. Let's figure out how we can now make it so that people have access and control of their own bodies, mm-hmm. in a smart way. I'm not saying to be not smart about it, but really to start leading the conversation, because if we don't do it, we're fucked, literally. Nobody's going to do it.
Can I ask you one more question? I know that we have
to go for it.
This is a serious thing. So,
absolutely.
So there are people like that listen to our show that reach out to us and they are in middle America. They don't have the community we have. They don't have the resources we have. And say if I needed to get a new doctor, which I recently did because I wasn't comfortable with my doctor, I got an LGBTQ+ doctor. Wonderful. And I can tell him everything and he completely understands and walks me through everything I need to do. What if you don't have that access? Can somebody call you or somebody like you have a remote session and maybe get the proper care that they need if they can't necessarily afford to fly to California or New York?
Yes. So I do Skypes all the time, emails. We communicate obviously via DM. So I'm more than happy to kind of spearhead and help people out. I think nowadays, because of telemedicine, And when you look at some of the programs that are out there, like Hims or Roman or a lot of these online, they're not necessarily gay focused. So stay tuned, because there's some stuff in the pipeline. But with that said, it's at least access to now having what is there, right, and having what's available, accessible. And nowadays, you know, again, it's there's so much that's out there if people are looking. But I think the key for us is to keep doing what we're doing to educate the listeners, to start asking the right questions. And then if they're not getting it where they are, now it's seeking everything else out, because this is, you know, 2019. We do have access, and anal care is not very difficult. It's right, just a matter of making sure that you get the right providers to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing point. And yeah, if you don't feel like you can talk to your doctor, get a new one.
Yeah, and you know, I also wanted
to keep licking ass.
I also wanted to point out too that, you know, most of the situations that gay men find themselves in are also things that, you know, any heterosexual couple could be exposed to. So if you're afraid of asking your doctor because of who you are as a person, because you're gay, about potential medication that could help you, you could also keep in the back of your mind that this is medication or a process that also is available for straight people, and having that conversation with your doctor without having the element of being gay in it is also a possibility, which will allow you to get access to the medication that you need.
Yes. What he said.
So in other words, you know, bite the bullet, say, hey, no, you know, I had an experience with this woman and I need medication or whatever. If you don't feel comfortable talking to your doctor one way or another, you just need to make sure that you get access to the medication that you need to stay healthy and productive in our society, mm-hmm, and protect others.
All right.
So on that note, Dr. G, it's always amazing to have you on. Really, it's the highlight of our month, and we get so much amazing information. And you guys can go to bespokesurgical.com to get information on Dr. G. He is also available on all the social media networks, whether that be Instagram, whether that be Facebook or Twitter, under Bespoke Surgical. And it is always amazing to have you on. Thank you for joining us.
All right, guys. I'll be listening to the rest of the show.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. All right.
Well,
bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen,
what did he just do? All right, bye, Dr. G.
Well, ladies and gents, that was Dr. G. We are going to then now jump into our break, and so we'll leave you with some music. When we come back, we're going to have Pat Riley joining us.
He's still on Skype.
He's
just laughing at us.
Because okay, he's probably waiting for Nick to be like, wait, I have one more question, actually, before we go.
Well, listen, we're going on break. Here's some music. When we come back, we have Pat Riley.
Hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. Cause if you
from the break, that was Time by none other than Pat Riley, who also happens to be our guest tonight for the second half of the show. As you heard, such a soulful voice, and that's not the only music he has. I found out that there's a couple of other tracks on SoundCloud that are available, and I'm super excited to sort of kind of, you know, feature those if we're allowed to. But anyway, Pat, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey. I'm good. How are you guys?
We are wonderful. We were just listening and jamming to your latest tune, Time. And
I was having an issue. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows.
Oh, okay, great. We're all on the same page? Okay, great. It happens. You know what I mean? Like, you got to live your life.
So very quickly, before we jump into your music, while we were on break, I forgot.
Fuck you both. I'm sorry.
No, hold on. Wait.
While we were on break, typically I would mute the mic so whatever we're saying here is not heard anywhere else. And I didn't mute the mic, so everyone on digital stream radio heard Trish saying she was going to run upstairs
and take home. Tom says it, and I'm like, oh, shit. What did we say? Oh, no, we were fine. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
All of our listeners heard too.
Everyone heard Trish go, no. Wait, how much time do we have? And I'm like, are you debating if you have time to take a poop? So how'd everything come out?
It's a long story.
Awesome. We'll hear about it later.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Don't worry. I actually got in late, so I didn't hear that. Lovely.
Well, you were muted. It's just on digital stream radio.
Say that again.
You were muted. It's just on digital stream radio.
Just on our streaming service. Not a big deal. Yeah.
And I do have a quick question for you. Normally we would do this before we come on the air. Do you have a headset or something? Because I'm having if it works, absolutely.
Okay. Give me 2 seconds.
Fantastic. So while you're walking while you're looking for your AirPods, Trish, how did everything come out?
Everything came out well. So just as a reminder, because we're not going to talk about my butt anymore, just as a reminder, so Pat was in Afterglow, which was an amazing show that me and Chris got to go see. We've had Pat on the show a couple of times, and we love him dearly, and he's adorable, and I had no idea that this boy could sing. And can she sing?
He can sing.
I was like, where did this come from? And then I started Googling him the other day. That's a little awkward. But anyway, there are like videos. There are YouTube videos of him singing with other people, too. He's got a good voice. Well, he's a triple threat.
And this is why we're going to be actually talking about his music and his work, because I'm super excited to do so. I love to sing. And so when I hear other people that, you know, you wouldn't expect because either they're in theater or acting and they're singing and then you hear their voice, you're like, oh, my God, wow. And I love the fact that your choice of music, right, what you're gravitating towards as far as what you're putting out there is really cool, too, because it's not something that I would expect from someone who's in theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I don't know. My whole life, I've always been really interested in, like, commercial music, and I've always felt very emotional by it. Like, it's always kind of made me feel very emotional. And so kind of just, I don't know, in the past, like, year and a half, I've been kind of analyzing what else I'm interested in doing that isn't just sort of only solely focused on acting, and other ways that I can kind of get out, you know, the creative stuff that I feel like I have inside of me. And so I was like, let's take a bat at this. Let's see how we like it. And I got to work with two of my friends who are just like incredible producers, and they really helped me sort of figure this stuff out.
So what got you to this point? Because I know last time we were talking to you, you had worked on a web series, which we talked about. You worked on the show Afterglow. Then we haven't really caught up since then. So what have you been up to, and what led you to writing this song and sharing it?
Yeah. I mean, I have been up to a bunch of different things. I've, you know, been auditioning and sort of like still continuing my life as an actor, but I sort of had this feeling like it's just not enough. It's not enough for me to be going day by day, waiting for to book a job or to get asked to do something, or, you know, hold my breath when my agents don't get back to me about something. And so I have really spent the past year and a half just focusing on stuff that I can be in control of and like creative projects that I want to create, because after Afterglow, actually, I really felt a strong, strong sense of leadership, and so like creative leadership. And so I wanted to take that into the other creative fields that I'm interested in. So I've been doing a lot of writing. I've been co-writing a feature with my writing partner who wrote Danny the Manny, that web series that I did. Mm-hmm. And we also filmed something called Dating My Mother, which is a feature that came out, I think, by the time that we had talked, for sure. But I'm not sure, actually. I don't know when it came out. But so he and I have been friends since college. And so we... after we had finished doing Dating My Mother, we were like, let's write something together. So I've been writing, I've been working on a one-man show. I've been doing music stuff. I've been spending a lot of time doing that. And I'm sort of creating a queer networking site that for creative people in any field as a way to kind of rally ourselves around one another and like lift each other up. And basically as like a networking thing so that you can find other queer artists that you can connect to. And it hasn't been released yet, but I think it will be released probably in the next week or two. But it's called The Collective. And it's basically just a great way, I think, for us as queer people to be supporting the work that continues to get our identity and our experience out into the world in an authentic way.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, and you're choosing to release The Collective right around, you know, World Pride. So, you know, it's also an amazing opportunity for queer artists to come together and say, hey, listen, let's do something fantastic, you know, collaboratively to be able to do projects that really highlight what our community has to offer. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit more about the song itself. So tell me a little bit more about Time. Tell me about what it means and the arc of the song and where you came up with it.
About a year and a half ago, I had like met someone who I really fell pretty hard for, and he doesn't live in New York, and we felt such a deep connection. And so it sort of was about this like difference in space that we had and the distance between one another. And I think there's this aspect of the song that I really love, which is really crucial to our relationship. We're still kind of doing it, you know. He's my boyfriend now. So it worked
Yay!
Out.
Yay!
But at the time, it felt very, there was like no pressure to it. And it felt very earnest and healthy in a way that was like, I don't want to like grab onto this because I know that that would make it much harder for us and much more difficult down the road because we would start feeling these obligations. And so I think there's this aspect to the song that's kind of like healthy in my head, you know, of like, I don't want to pressure you, but you know, there's so much that I know that we could do together. And so at least if we can't be together, then at least you can think about me when you like play this song. Or, you know, there's kind of like a double meaning, I guess, for the word, because it is the name of the song, but also like playing with time together is like an aspect that I really like in the song too.
So one of the things that I noticed immediately, first and foremost, is the popish aspect of the song, but there's also an R&B element to the song. And not only in this song, but some of the other songs that I featured. So you're really reaching into that like rhythm and blues aspect, and your voice lends itself so eloquently to it. What gravitated you towards the rhythm and blues side of the beats and the music that you chose for the song?
Well, first, I only have one song out, so I don't know what other songs you were playing.
I went on SoundCloud and there's
another Patrick Riley.
No, I know there's a Patrick Riley, but there's a couple of songs on SoundCloud.
On my profile?
Yes.
Okay. Those are just songs that I like am retweeting, like, or like reposting because I really like them. But okay. I just want to hear
I'm like, no.
The whole time he was so confused.
I was like, corrected. Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't find anything else, but okay, Tom.
I'm like, I'm listening away. I'm like, whoa, this man's, this is, I can get into this. So, but going back to time, it's, I'm hearing an R&B element. Tell me about that.
I don't know. Like as a kid, I mean, growing up in Houston, I feel like I was always kind of exposed to R&B music and, the radio was always sort of playing just like such an amazing diverse group of artists on the radio. And so I never felt, like very, excited by other sounds. I feel like I really love the beauty of like singers and like the emotion that comes with R&B. And so, how it feels very honest and very vulnerable. And I personally feel that I myself singing other types of music just don't feel as connected to that. And that's like actually been a really, interesting journey for me as I've been recording and writing music is I've had to try a lot of different things that I think a lot of musicians have to do in order to figure out what makes you sing, what makes you want to sing, what do you like and what do you enjoy and what lets your heart kind of open. And I really have always grown up loving R&B music and pop. And so trying to meld the two together has always been really exciting for me. So
is this something you grew up listening to because of your parents or is this something that you explored on your own?
You know, it's funny. No, my parents, I would say tend to listen to like a lot of classics, a lot of like bands, you know, a lot of like white music, I would say. and it was, I don't know, growing up, I mean, there are certain like artists that I love that my parents introduced me to, but I did always feel this kind of difference of just like, I just don't really feel connected to this. And right. So how do I, what about the music that like I love and what about the stuff on the radio? I mean, I just loved listening to definitely like top 40. That was like kind of becoming much bigger when I was a kid and like, you know, in the way that it is sort of today. And then, you know, Houston always has all these incredible R&B stations or hip hop stations. And so I was sort of just always listening to that. And that's like kind of what me and my friends grew up on.
So speaking of that, so typically when someone releases a song so melodic like Time, it's very timeless. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can listen to, you know, and really ease into it. But a lot of artists usually decide to also go the opposite route and come out with like a remix version of it and where you would have some sort of either like classic house or a lot of like, you know, dance music associated with it and remake the song. Mm-hmm. Do you have any plans in doing that for this?
I don't have any plans in doing that.
Because I can hear hear like some DJ grabbing the song Time and remixing it and putting it in like in a house version, having it play in the clubs and you're just like, you know, you're out in the dance floor really enjoying yourself and just doing your thing. I can hear
Hey, if somebody wants to do that, go ahead or reach out to me and I'll help you in any way I can.
That's amazing though.
That's awesome. I mean, maybe one day, but as of right now, no, I'm sort of trying to focus more on what this EP I think that I'm releasing will be.
Right.
So
back to the fact that you're a gay singer-songwriter, I want to talk about the fact that this song itself is actually kind of relatable to anybody. But I want to talk about specifically what it means to you to share your story in such a way and what you hope for people listening in the LGBT community to take from it. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's super, super important to me to always be, I feel so inspired by so many people, so many disenfranchised people, whether they're people of color or any person in a minority space that is so proud of who they are. I'm constantly so floored by the courage that people have and I'm so inspired by so many people that lead with their difference, because we are in a world now where it is so readily washed over. So it's really important to me that, you know, people know that I am gay, and my songs are probably from the perspective of a man being in love with another man. And I think what I love about music in particular is the balance between specific and general. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what allows something to be universal, but also kind of hooks you into a certain narrative that you can play along with and you can feel connected to. So I actually think it's quite a fun game to play when you right. make music, of how can I make this mine, but also bring it to so many other people. And I think the beauty in really diving into who you are and bringing that forth in your art is that people who are different from you realize how similar they are to you too, you know, who are maybe on a piece of paper very different from you. You know, they start to realize that actually all of us carry the same emotional landscape inside. And so, that's really important to me. I don't know if I answered your question necessarily.
No, I think you did.
You kind of got me on a little tangent.
No, and I think you did though. I think it's interesting for me to think, like, when, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't have gay artists that were so openly out and proud, and sharing their stories and their music with the world. And I think that it's so important that we now do. And
we just had Cher.
But Cher wasn't gay. Cher just catered to the gay community.
Yeah, so.
right.
Which, don't get me wrong, I love Cher. The point that I'm trying to make is that there's so much inspiration that a young individual, you know, listening to your music can take from and say, oh my God, it's so great to see somebody that is so successful and sharing his story and making me feel like I'm not alone. And I think that that's so beautiful, the work that you're doing. But I also think that that's a double-edged sword, right? Because I think being a queer artist, comes with its difficulties. You're gonna face a lot of pushback. You know what I mean? It's hard to be queer and share music that you want the whole world to see without backlash. And I think that it's beautiful and strong of you to do what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh well, thank you so much. I feel like I have been lucky enough in my life to have been out for a good amount of time, where I have been a performer and been somebody who is trying to put their face out into the world. And I feel like I'm pretty well equipped to deal with the backlash that could come. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I try to lead with peace and love and just expressing yourself and letting people be creative in whatever means possible. But you know, there's always, I think all of us can relate, that just being gay and being LGBT or being queer of any kind, like, it has its struggles. Mm-hmm. And I think taking the things that are really hard in your life and making them into art, or making them into something that makes you feel proud of who you are, is just the key and is always the remedy to the hate that you receive.
So in general, how has it been received? How have your fans taken it in? How have other people taken it in?
Oh my God, everybody's been so nice. You know, people are so, so sweet and generous, and, you know, they're sharing it, and they're telling me that they're feeling emotional and they're crying on their way to work or whatever. And that's just a really, really great feeling. This is the first thing in my life that I've created on my, you know, I mean, obviously I had people helping me, but sort of at my own accord, I pushed to create and I put it out there, and I was so afraid and nervous to put it out there because it feels like a baby to you and it's very precious, and you get worried about what's going to happen and you think the worst, you know, you think the world will end the minute it's released. But people have been nothing but kind. And so that's been really, really nice to know that something that I made is touching people.
So that's amazing.
So I have two last things I want to ask you before we wrap this up. And one is, if you know, the LGBTQ plus community, both youth and people of our age, can take one thing away from the song, what do you want them to take away from it? And then also, what are the goals? Are you planning to make an album? What's going on with just this one song that we are now listening to?
Yeah. Well, for now, the goal is just an EP. So I think maybe like at releasing at some point, I don't know when, but I think just an EP with time will be on there, but I think maybe four or five songs. And I'm kind of going back to the creative board. So kind of flipping things around, changing what I thought it would be to newer things that I'm discovering. So that's, I think, the goal. Hopefully that would happen before the end of the year. And maybe I will keep myself to that now that I've said this in a public space.
We'll be checking up on you.
Yeah.
Well, you let us know, because we'll be more than happy to, you know, feature the songs now that I'm all bummed out that some of the other ones that were on, you know, SoundCloud
are just like a retweet.
Yeah. No, of course. I will definitely keep you updated. But I think, what do I want people to take away from the song if they're listening to it? I was sort of talking, I'm at home right now, and I've been talking to my mom all weekend.
Hi, mom and dad.
So many different things. Love my parents. But I was talking to my mom about, I feel that what the song achieves so well is that it really touches on this, like a modern relationship that I think more people than we think are actually go through, which is where you meet somebody and you meet them kind of knowing that it could never work out. And because of that, you have this freedom to yourself. And then when you have this restraint and it's like, I can't be with you, but I know that we have this like insane connection. And just basically like focusing on long distance, I think that's a very, very common thing that as I'm getting older, so many of my friends are in long distance relationships. And I think basically just not trying to force anything, but letting love play out in the way that it should, and cherishing it for the moment that you have.
And I think that's important too, right? You just got to let things run their course. And when you think about music and how people write, you know, it's not about what people expect you to write. You write the song and people take from it whatever they can. And I think that, you know, even when I listen to music, that's usually what I do. It's like, you know, I listen to a lot of different types of artists and many different types of music and, you know, whether it's a gay artist or a straight artist, whenever there is an artist that's singing to a woman, for example, I imagine that it's the man that I love. Or so there's a lot of different ways in which you can really extrapolate so many different things from music. But what you're doing, and what I appreciate that you're doing, is that you're an out artist. Not only are you an artist who sings, you're an actor. And everything that you do, you're putting your it's not even a persona, you're putting yourself forward. And allowing the community to see that you are an artist within the LGBT community that's doing amazing things in the city, whether you're acting or singing. And the song really just resonates with what I like. And I was like, you know, I can, when Trish sent over the song, or should I say Nick, when he sent over the song, I was like, all right, I'm going to listen to it. And so I played it. I was like, ooh, I can get into this. I'm sitting at work and I'm listening to it and I'm listening over and over and over again. And the lyrics just really stand out because you can tell that it's been written by someone that really understands what it is to be emotionally construed, right? Because you can't really, when you're a gay man or a lesbian or part of our community, it's like sometimes you love and you have to do so in a box because you're afraid of other people knowing what your love is for and who it's for. But what you're doing is just opening that box, and your out comes this amazing surprise of emotion. And we know that it comes from an openly gay artist. And that is typically what we love to see.
And to piggyback too, it's like, you know, we hear so much from heterosexual artists that sing so many love songs, or, you know, you watch your PS I Love You or these movies, and they're all heterosexual. But at the end of the day, whether you're straight or gay, we all live in the same world and feel the same things. And you're sharing your story as a gay man, not necessarily purposefully, like, that's like your goal, that I'm a gay man and I'm throwing this in your face. You're sharing your story as a gay man, and it's a true story. And then there are people that can just honestly relate to it and be like, oh, I'm straight and I've been through that too, or I'm gay and I'm going through that. And it makes people one and the same. You know what I mean? We're all the same. We're just trying to find that right love and that right person in life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately what I hope people take away from it is just whatever they need to take away from it. You know, like you were saying, I think that's the beauty of music, is being able to go into your story that you need for your life, you know? So yeah, I mean, that's great.
Awesome.
So we can expect that obviously you'll be working on more music. We would definitely like to know when you do that, because we would love to feature it if you allow us on the show, so that we can use it and let our listeners know that, you know, what's coming down the pike. And, I would like to thank you for taking time out of your day. It looks like it's a beautiful day out there somewhere, because I see the sun.
Oh my gosh. It is. I chose a really nice window.
You look great.
In my home.
And I want to thank you for, again, joining us on the show. This is, you know, quite obviously you've been on the show numerous times for different aspects of your career and your art. And we appreciate every single aspect of the art that you do and choose to share with us.
And we love you.
That's right.
That too.
And I love you guys. Thank you for asking me. It's very, very kind of you. And I really appreciate your support.
And the next time you're in the city and the next time the boys go down, hopefully I'll join them, because I didn't get to meet you guys the last time when they went down for Afterglow. So I was pretty bummed about that.
That was literally amazing.
It was such a good show.
Meeting you was great, but seeing you naked was even better.
I mean, I also really appreciate going out and having a couple cocktails after, fully clothed was fine with me.
So, Pat, tell us, where can our listeners find your music?
Oh my gosh, you can find it pretty much on every platform that you can get music on. Some platforms I didn't even know existed, but definitely Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. I think there's even like a Facebook availability, but Spotify and iTunes, I would say, I think is where most people find their music. But honestly, it's on every platform. It's on YouTube too, which is cool.
Yeah, and if you are on a subscription music service, just remember, go up, look for the song, hit play, listen to it, replay if possible, because, you know, the more you play the song, the better it is for the artist. And I always think that, you know, especially if you're already on a music subscribing service like me, I'm on Apple Music, so I'm just, of course, you know, just going to replay.
And keep tuning into Gay Talk every week, because Tom's been playing it. You know, I mean, that's you have to listen to us bitching and all the bullshit to get to it, but, you know, it's worth the wait.
Yeah, that song is going to be stuck with us for a little while until you come out with something new. How about that? Now you have an incentive.
Good. Okay. Great.
So Tommy doesn't play a retweet by accident and then we have to go to court. We don't want that now, Tom.
That's right. Well, Pat, I want to thank you for taking, like I said, taking time out of what seems to be an amazing, gorgeous day out where you're at, and being with us. You're amazing. We love you.
Well, thank you so much. I love you guys as well. And thanks for having me on the show.
Tell Mom and Dad I say hi.
Okay. I will.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Pat Riley. Again, his song Time is available on iTunes and all the major digital publishing platforms like Spotify and probably Google Play Music, and of course on SoundCloud. But definitely use one of the services, because it does help the artist. And again, I want to thank Pat for joining us. And we're going to move on to the show. We've got a couple of more things that we need to get into. And then we'll close the show and say goodbye. So I'm going to kick it over to Trish, because she's got a couple of things she needs to do.
I mean, hello, how are you? So we are done talking about that. And it was amazing to see Patrick again. Again, you got to check out his song. It's really amazing. He's truly talented. Like, when I say that he's an amazing actor, and I said earlier on the show that I never knew he could sing, he's an amazing singer, too. He literally is a triple threat. So make sure you check out his stuff. We'll make sure to post all of his stuff on our post tonight.
That's right.
But before we close out the show, I did want to cover one story. I think it's an important story to cover, and I think we could all speak to it without reading the article, honestly. So I wanted to talk about the House of Representatives passing an historic Equality Act, which basically means that it got through the House of
help representatives.
Me. Representatives, thank you. And this Equality Act would then literally... I am losing my words right now.
Yes,
it would provide a lot of protections for people in the trans community, people in
amend,
the LGBT
amend.
Community.
Yes, it would
and, amend the civil rights. Constitution.
Yeah.
So,
go for
no,
it.
No, correct me.
No, it would amend the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I had to find the year. I forgot what year it was.
Yeah, and it's an amazing legislative achievement to be able to pass this, mm-hmm. something this significant for our community in the House. The problem we're having is that in order for it to become law, it needs to go to the Senate, mm-hmm. it needs to pass.
And then it could still be vetoed.
And then, of course, you've got the idiot-in-chief that's sitting in the Oval Office that may veto the actual bill itself. So,
but the biggest thing to acknowledge here is that...
It passed.
It passed. It passed the House of Representatives, which is huge because it was first introduced in 1974 and nothing happened with it. Mm-hmm. And now we have at least passed one House. That's one step further. Like we continually say, there are small steps, but we're taking those steps. And what this Equality Act would actually do, it would literally people would not be legally able to discriminate against people based on gender identity, sexual orientation, in areas of employment, housing, public accommodation, regardless of state bans, which is huge. It's a big statement and it's a huge step. Yes, I doubt that it'll get passed in the Senate or even acknowledged in the Senate to be voted on, but this is the first step in what we've been looking for a long time.
No, of course. And the significance of this is very, very big for our community.
And it's important to look back to the history of the Equal Rights Amendment. This goes back, like Nick was saying, to the early 1970s, 1972, to be precise. Congress overwhelmingly approved this amendment, and it set a 7-year deadline for 3/4 of the states to ratify it. In order, that's how... the Constitution is amended. 3/4 of the states need to ratify it for it to be added to the Constitution. Now, they had a 7-year deadline for that, and they only got 35 states on board when you need 38 to ratify the Constitution. Last year, on May 30, I believe it was in May of 2018, Illinois actually ratified this amendment, making it the 37th state to ratify it, mm-hmm. falling short of one state. Mm-hmm. So this would bypass Congress,
right?
Should the states, one more state get on board? Now it would still have to go to the beginning because it overwent their 7-year deadline. And of course, at that time, this didn't include sexual orientation. It was quote, "Quality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." Now we've gone further by adding sexual orientation, mm-hmm. gender identity, which is fantastic. So there is a pathway for this. Obviously, now it's going to get sent to the Senate. But there is even a pathway around it should enough states get on board.
But the fear behind that is that with the addition of the new language to the bill, there is a possibility that certain states may
pull back out. Right. Exactly.
So
that's a possibility. You're right. I think what's also really important to note is that recently an official in the Trump administration, big surprise, said the White House does not support the Equality Act because it threatens to undermine parental and conscious rights.
And in light of all the religious liberty acts that have been taking place in a lot of states, including or but not limited to the women not being able to actually have control of their own sexual health when it comes to making decisions.
Disgusting.
On
in Alabama.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for this to become a huge battle. And again, the hurdle is the Senate and the individual that's sitting in the White House.
Mm-hmm. And with his rhetoric and with Mike Pence there, Alabama effectively criminalized abortion.
Yeah.
It is illegal in the state of Alabama to undergo or for a medical professional to perform or attempt to perform an abortion.
I forget what article I saw, but they were saying that if a woman gets an abortion, she could face the death penalty. And I can't remember
the actual medical professionals that are performing.
I know what he's talking about, and that was a proposed bill to put the woman up for the death penalty. The law that passed in Alabama was a doctor who is found guilty of performing an abortion can be sentenced to up to 99 years in prison, mm-hmm. and a doctor attempting an abortion can be sentenced up to 10 years.
Yeah. So you have a longer sentence for performing an abortion, which is legal in the U.S., than you would for an individual actually raping someone. So, I mean,
or that, incest.
And that's
there's no loopholes.
And we also need to take into account that, like, let's consider the fact that it takes two to tango here. Mm-hmm. And it's all over the internet. People are talking about it constantly. It's not a woman's fault that she's pregnant. There are two people involved in this situation. Mm-hmm. And you can't just say, hey, I'm going to blame this person and you can't do this. You have to take into account what happened in the situation. Was the person raped? Was it willing? Was it not? Like, this is it's not fair that a man can get a woman pregnant and then a woman can't make the decision to say, no, I didn't want this to happen to me. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely ridiculously unfair. I've been trying to get pregnant for months and it's still not happening.
Well, the 30 plus elderly white men in the Alabama Congress, they figured that it is up to the man to decide if a woman can do it or not.
And that's the most important thing that we need to point out. 30 plus men, white men, made the decision for women in the state to be able to choose and decide on their own sexual health.
Right.
And that is alarming.
Granted, the governor is female, and she did sign it into law.
And she signed it into law.
Yeah, and that bitch can't have babies at this point anymore either.
But, I mean, that's not the point.
She was signing that shit and holding herself up with a cane.
My thing is this. It's like, we are in 2019. There's no reason why men should be making laws that would govern what women can and cannot do with their bodies. That's number one. Number two, it is really hard to swallow the fact that it is legal to actually get prescribed Viagra if you're a male, but you can't even get contraception if you're a female, because certain, you know, religious organizations deem it that, you know, no, we can't provide it because it's against our religious views. Like, for example, businesses like Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby was one of the biggest corporations that was out there fighting the mandate for Obamacare,
the Affordable Care Act,
or the Affordable Care Act, to provide contraceptive covered, mm-hmm. and they fought it and they won
all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and it's shocking that, you know, we see this. It's 2019 and we're actually seeing men, you know, regulate what a woman can do with her body. It is just completely shocking. It is wrong and it should not be happening.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So I think we need to move on. On that note, we should close, but obviously there's a couple of more things that we need to cover.
Well, I just want to mention that, Chris, you got a shout out, and I know you don't check the emails regularly as I do, but we've actually received a couple emails, which next week we will cover because we'll have more time. But I want to make note that Dan, who is one of our listeners from Australia,
that's right,
wanted to just make note that you're doing an amazing job, and we are, as a group, doing an amazing job talking about not only the gay issues that we talk about and my penguins and animals and stuff, but the fact that you are really doing an amazing job covering Trump and talking about Trump, and we really need to continue to follow that and tear him apart and really tear him down, because he is going to change the face of America for the rest of our lives. And it's
and not only America, he's
it.
Changing the way even international politics are being viewed and how they're reacting to the way he's governing this nation. And it's just sad to see. But, you know, I read the email and I was like, yeah, he's right. I mean, you know, he's impacting the way prime ministers do business in other countries and the way other leaders around the world in democratic nations are really reacting to you know, right-wing movements within their own governments.
Mm-hmm. And he's someone who makes fun and bashes Angela Merkel and Macron and Trudeau, but he wants to be buddy-buddy with Duterte, Erdogan, Putin, Kim Jong-un. It's just an outrage, and this does need to be talked about. And who is this nice man from Australia who reached out to us?
His name's Dan.
Dan? Well, thank you, Dan.
And I'll give you more information after that. But I do... He said, from 31 minutes into the show, Chris begins to talk about scum meeting with yet more scum in your White House. Your show came alive for me anyways. A place no longer ill repute since America by the hand of your countrymen has set such a shocking individual loose within your most sacred office of former esteem. Former is the key word there. The White House no longer has any esteem. It has no clout in the areas of the world that
more
it
respect.
Needs to.
Yeah.
Correct.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. That's when we had the Prime Minister of Hungary, who's diminished democracy, puts down journalism, and essentially is trying to just dictate how that nation runs.
Yeah.
He follows that up with, I just want to say that this is where your greatest conversations lie, setting gay penguins aside.
Well, thank you.
There's a lot happening. Listen, the political landscape is going to go insane in the next anywhere 6 to 8 months. You're going to start seeing primary races along the Democratic Party lines really get heated up, and people start talking about possible candidates to challenge the shit gibbon that we have in the White House.
And shit gibbon.
And the shit gibbon is poised. He's ready to start his official campaign. Joe Biden is ready to set out to officially begin his campaign as well. It's going to be very busy for the next
Going to be very contentious.
Year and a half.
Got a lot of people, a lot of top Democrats that are running, everyone from Joe Biden
now.
to your man.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, thank you.
Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris. Yeah,
there's so many names that are really going to be challenging to really work out who is going to be the best individual to
defeat the president.
To defeat the president and not allow him to continue for another 4 years to really bring our nation and the world down with his lack of intelligence.
It's going to be such a hard decision. I mean, there are so many great candidates right now, and I'm just like, I'm stressed. I'm literally stressed about the candidates right now.
It's a lot, and I hope that they heed Obama's warning and heed Biden and Bernie Sanders' message. Like, they need to have they can't destroy one another during the primary, because then that just gives more ammunition to Donald Trump. Yes, they need to be out there and they need to talk about what they stand for. And yes, they should call out the candidates that didn't stand for things that the Democratic Party should stand for, but they should not go into the name calling and going to the fighting that the Republican Republican Party faced during their primary leading up to the 2016 election.
You know what my favorite thing about the candidates being announced right now and watching the race slowly start to begin is every time you see a Democratic candidate rise, like Buttigieg, for example, as soon as they have enough clout to be acknowledged nationally, what happens?
Trump.
He tweets.
Trump attacks them and belittles them. And I'm like, what the fuck is this man's problem? He is so afraid.
He's afraid. That's his problem.
He's so afraid when there's somebody that stands up. I mean, you're literally going to say you're smarter than Buttigieg. Like, no. No. No!
Especially somewhere that lost over $1 billion over the course of 10 years, you know, according to whatever was published that was available from the limited tax information that was available when he filed back in, I think it was like the late 90s or something like that.
Well, we're going to be hopefully finding out more, because a federal court has issued Trump's taxes are going to be released to Congress by order of a federal judge. I don't remember exactly the company that it was, but they said it today.
Well, they issued a subpoena, and I know that there's a lot going on. Listen, we obviously, this with two guests, we weren't planning on really breaking down the political landscape and what's going on, but there's a lot going on.
I'm just going to read what it says. It was a CNN thing.
Go for it.
It said a federal district judge has told the accounting firm Mazars it will need to turn over Donald Trump's accounting records from before he was president to the Democratic-controlled House Oversight Committee.
I did say committee, right? Yeah, you did.
Did I say committee?
Unfortunately, he's challenging all of that, and what he's doing is he's stalling, right? And he's going to challenge all of the subpoenas that are coming out of the House Intelligence Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, the House
every committee.
He's literally challenging every subpoena.
Right. Well, the judge. This is saying that in a 41-page opinion, Judge Amit Mehta of the D.C. District Court dealt a significant blow to the White House as he rejected Trump's attempt to block the committee's subpoena. So this is going past Donald Trump blocking the subpoena.
Yes, and he's going to push for this to end up at the Supreme Court.
Oh, absolutely.
He's going to try everything he can to delay, and say no obstruction, no collusion. And that's his response to everything.
I think we should pick this conversation up Another time, because we could go. I mean, yeah. I'm about to open a can of worms, right. And that's why I'm saying this, because right. I was about to say something. So
agreed.
Yeah.
All okay. Right, here, we'll push it along. Let's go into our Mama Kim's minute.
Yeah. All right. So everybody, it's been a minute, but now we're here with Mama Kim. Can I get a timer?
All right.
I'm on it.
Do a timer.
All right.
And go.
All right. So the first story we have is: can you help solve the mystery of transgender Julie Doe? The Trans Doe Task Force aims to give names to the nameless and help solve cold cases using the most modern forensic techniques. Two, Arthur, like the TV show character, comes out gay, marries, and is flooded with Twitter love, which is amazing. Alabama Senate passes national strictest abortion bill, which we sort of talked about. This bill, which will now go to the governor's desk, would ban abortion in almost all cases. Trump announces conscious rule that threatens LGBTQ healthcare. Starbucks, though, debuts Love Tumblr in honor of Pride Month. So thank you, Starbucks. And that is Mama Kim's Minute.
So these are stories, you know, if you're tuning in for the first time, these are stories that Mama Kim, one of our amazing listeners, sends us so that we're aware of what's going on around the world. And Nick likes to feature them in a minute or less. So we will be posting the actual links to these stories on our post tonight so that you guys can link to them and read them and get informed, just like we are every week, that Mama Kim sends us all her love.
Right. And to touch on that, I believe it was a character from Arthur that did come out.
Yeah, no, it was the teacher of Arthur?
I forget exactly who it was, but it was a character. Also, Alabama's Senate, yes, of course, passed it, and the governor did sign it, so it did become law. And the Trump conscious rule would allow medical professionals to deny service to LGBTQ plus patients.
Right. So those were the highlights, and Chris gave you a little bit more info. So...
All right. Shall we jump into our Gay Talk Term?
Yeah. This week's Gay Talk Term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com. I was like, did they change it?
is RIM.
RIM.
And we know why I've chose this.
Oh, it's our conversation right, with Dr. G.
Yep. So RIM, one, to lick or suck anus. Two, to lick with great gusto. Three, to lubricate the anus as a precursor to, well, you figure that out. And then my favorite synonym is analingus. Analingus.
Oh, analingus.
Analingus. Yeah, that's my favorite synonym. So that is your Gay Talk Term this week, RIM.
I love it. Analingus.
Analingus.
I think we should use that.
Try to, it could be like the word of the day. You have to at least, you know, fit it in every couple paragraphs or so. Find the opportunity to put that
in. Yeah, I know. I was,
I'll do that in my board meeting tomorrow.
I was really trying to love Chris, but he was being such an analingus.
Well, you know what?
I love it, though.
I like it. We're going to have fun with that one.
All right. On to Stay in Gay History.
Yes. I couldn't decide. They're short, so there are two.
All right. Go for it.
So on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
So the first one, when May 20th, 2008, in the great state of Oregon, the first openly gay mayor of a major United States city was elected. Sam Adams wins the primary election with a 58% vote. He takes office as the mayor of Portland, Oregon on January 1st, 2009.
Yeah.
So that's good news. Mm-hmm. And then this is another good one I didn't want to miss up. So this was the Romer versus Evans decision, when again, May 20th, back in the year of 1996. Amendment 2 to the Colorado Constitution specifies that homosexual and bisexual individuals are not a protected class. After these arguments, the Supreme Court goes on to strike Amendment 2 down in its decision that year because, quote, it was not rationally related to a legitimate state interest.
Interesting.
So those are two good ones.
You know, and you think 1996 and you jump all the way to 2015 that we now have marriage equality. Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at the Equality Act.
And there's it's amazing what 20 plus years can do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we might be rubbing our heads and thinking what the hell is going on right now. But I think that we're going to see significant strides within the next 25 years.
And these are all things I'm going to be teaching when I'm a teacher someday. Oh, this is the stuff that's going to be in our history
books.
With a
beard and all hairy and stuff.
It's going really gray too. You know,
and being very analingus.
That was good, actually. That one worked.
All right, guys, listen, if you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device. device or web browser as soon as the episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon. Patreon is a service that allows you, our listener, to help support the show. You can do so by donating anywhere between $1 or more, and we collect those every month to help us out on our show here. So, Chris?
Yes, next week is our annual Memorial Day bash during the day and then dishing for the episode.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot going on. We're going to have smoky barbecue, refreshing cocktails, and a whole lot of cursive. So get ready.
You know it. All right, so thank you to our guests, Dr. G and Pat Riley, for joining us on today's show. Dr. G's blog is available on Medium.com, and Pat's music is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and pretty much all other digital music platforms. So make sure you check them out. We'll post all their links on our website tonight. Amazing. Our post tonight.
Christopher, open that box. Pull it out.
Can we please put a rubber on it?
Yes, mm-hmm. Go for it.
All righty, everyone. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media. Big surprise. Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0. Instagram, at Gay Talk 20. Oh, fuck.
Damn it.
Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0. Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab at the top of your web browser where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or Chris, the individual host. You can also, Analingus over here. You can also leave us a question via voice message. We can answer those for you on live on the air. You can just call us at 334-GAY-TALK, or if you need the numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.